What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game Podcast, John LaRocca, and I here on a Thursday night. Hopefully you are listening to this on a Friday morning because this thing goes out pretty late. But John, you know, last week this time, we thought we had a specific wrestling business, and we come back and the wrestling business has changed all over again. WWE owned by Endeavor, 51% majority. Vince McMahon was doing stuff at Raw. AEW is going to run an 80,000 seat stadium.
Vince McMahon, I don't know, going out for the night like a 1950s villain character.
What do you think that look is supposed to be? Because I thought immediately when I saw it, I thought Clark Gable. That would be in Vince's lane as far as like a handsome person in the real world. Like he would have been a little kid and seen Clark Gable. Some other people say Gomez Adams.
Yeah, I see a lot of that. The Street Fighter from the movie Street Fighter, the live action movie. That, you know, what's his name? I forget the guy's the villain.
Raul Julia.
There's a little bit of that. Who played Gomez Adams and Adams Family as well?
Yeah, movies.
Just bizarre. But yeah, I know. I mean, WWE finally sold, which we knew was going to happen, and Vince over Dana White in the hierarchy of the company.
Well, I mean, when it comes to running the actual company, mm-hmm. like Vince has, you know, Vince does have more experience in those kind of roles, and it doesn't make Dana any lesser than what he is. You just put Dana in the strengths, and so Dana and Nick Khan kind of parallel there. First thing, I just want to make a quick mention as it relates to this show, because we've had this branding, and I mentioned this last week. I was going to kick off a new show. I've been wanting to utilize this branding even more, the Fight Game Podcast. I think it has a tiny little itty bitty teeny weeny little bit of gravitas out there now since we've been doing it for so long. And we're thankful that we get to be on this network with this show. But we also have our own network, the Fight Game Media Network. And I wanted to bring a version of this show, you know, going back several months. I was trying to add like an interview on the tail end of this show. You know, I was bringing on, you know, college football writer Chris Vanini. I was bringing on other people just to, you know, have conversations, people from the Fight Game Media Network. And I thought, you know, I really like this idea, but it kind of takes away from what our bread and butter is, which is me and you talking about wrestling. And so when the opportunity came where we can make some adjustments on the network, I was like, hey, I'm going to throw a new Fight Game Podcast on the network with me talking to other people in the industry. So first episode goes up tonight in the Fight Game Media Network feed. You can download through whatever service that you have. First guest is my We're Live Pal co-host, Andrew Zarian. We're talking about all the craziness that's been going on. And then, you know, in the latter half of the show, we talk about pro wrestling media. And Paul Fontaine also joins me in the beginning because UFC 287 is happening this weekend. And we go over some of Paul's best bets as far as who he thinks there's good value on in some of these fights. So that is that. That will not take away from this show. I think that it'll actually make this show better because I'm not going to be trying to do other things with it. It's just going to be me and John. We're just going to talk about stuff as we usually do and focus on the other stuff in the other feed. So let's get into some of this stuff. And, you know, I think I just want to go right into the thumbs up, thumbs down, because I think that will give us some structure in what we're going to talk about when it comes to what happened at WrestleMania and last weekend and such. So let's just go there first.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
All right, John, I wanted to give you the first go ahead for thumbs up. And I know you watched a decent amount of wrestling over the weekend. So what was your thumbs up?
I want to give a thumbs up to Josh Barnett for Bloodsport 9. I thought that was a really good show. I thought it was one of the better Bloodsport shows in a very long time. I mean, they've had good shows, but I thought from top to bottom, things, the matches are good. And ultimately, what I really liked about it is that Josh really passed the torch to Timothy Thatcher. It's kind of like that face of that brand when Thatcher got the win over Josh Barnett in the main event. And it was a really, really good match. And I know a lot of people were talking about Speedball Mike Bailey and Kota Ibushi, and that was a lot of fun.
Okay, can I stop you there? Because that's the only one I saw, but I saw a very clipped version of it. So I didn't see the whole thing. I didn't see all the storytelling. I didn't like the wacky Speedball moves in that setting.
Yeah, Speedball is kind of like, I don't dislike the guy, or think negative of his work. I think he's fine, but I think he's kind of a middle of the card kind of guy. He's fun, you know.
It just didn't seem like a fit for that wrestling show. Whereas on all the other wrestling shows over the weekend, he was a great fit. Like he excels at a lot of the stuff that the fans were looking forward to on WrestleMania weekend.
I think Bloodsport, a lot of people think it's just going to be the grappling, right? But I think you got to have like the karate guys or the whatever, you know, martial art discipline he uses. Yeah, you know, it fit. And then Kota Ibushi was a perfect opponent for that because Kota does the kicks as well. And,
yeah.
But ultimately, to me, the best, most dramatic match was the main event with Josh Barnett and Timothy Thatcher. And there was a clear picture painted at the end that, you know, going forward, Barnett's going to probably slide down the card a bit and Thatcher would be the guy. And I think that's a good choice. And I kind of wish they just run more events. You know, I mentioned that on my Take It Home podcast last week. You know, like four events would be great. Like kind of tent pole it with some, like we talked about it, some Strikeforce shows.
We booked all of Bloodsport, you know, like last year, I think we did it.
And then also I mentioned on Take It Home podcast as well. You can check that on the free feed of Fight Game podcast, Fight Game Network. But I thought, we're coming up on the 10th Bloodsport. What's the goal of these guys?
Yeah.
And gals? Like what's the goal? So I think now it's probably time to introduce a championship. And, you know, I don't know if you want to introduce a women's championship. You have a couple, you have one woman fight on the show. I don't know if that's going to be, but for sure, you got to have a men's championship, just something for people to strive for. But then again, it is tough because it's a show that happens. They're not contracted, right? A lot of guys do it because they enjoy the style. They also enjoy working with Josh Barnett, but availability, right? Over say four shows a year, it might be tough to kind of do that, build that stuff. But if you have one or a few guys that you're loyal to, you can build around it'll work.
I think I agree with you. There needs to be more shows because when you just said he passed the torch to Tim Thatcher, I was like, great.
Next year.
When are we going to watch it? Next year this time? Yeah. So, okay, what do you think about this? Josh, I'm sure, has relationships with a lot of people who run independent pro wrestling. What about having Bloodsport matches across some of these big independent shows? What's the Warrior Wrestling one? You know, you could have exclusively, this is going to be Bloodsport style. These are people who compete in Bloodsport already, so they're familiar to the brand, just to kind of keep the name going around, because you know, we get to see it like once a year and I always love it. I didn't get to see this year's because I was going out of town and trying to get everything done by Thursday night, so I didn't even get to watch it. But it's the easiest and quickest and most exciting watch to me, WrestleMania weekend of the indie stuff. So it's also my taste, but I love that stuff. I just want to see more of it. I want to hear more about it. I want to see them do other things with it. And it just feels like it is kind of like this show that exists only during this one time.
Yeah, I mean, using other independents is a good idea, but I think part of the Bloodsport appeal is like it's no ropes, right? So unless you're gonna, now you probably have to do it with ropes, and I don't know, many indies gotta really have great ring crews to take down ring ropes and put it back up. You know, so it's a good idea, or they just, you know, you could just do it with the ropes. I mean, I prefer the ropes. I prefer rope breaks and stuff. To me, I think would that even, I mean, it sits apart from a lot of WrestleMania weekend shows because there's no ropes. It looks different, obviously.
But then they do stuff where they jump off the thing.
Well, that was one of my main critiques of the show, is that I think this point, this show especially, a lot of people went to the floor too much. I think you got to save that. Like, you really got to be, you know, you really got to let the talent know, like, certain matches can only do that. And because you want to save that for the main event stuff or the bigger matches.
Yeah. All right, my thumbs up. It is none other than CNBC reporter Alex Sherman. Alex Sherman, I follow him on Twitter. I feel like I've been following him long enough to where the Twitter followers were not as even hefty as they are now. But Alex Sherman broke the WWE to Endeavor story. He had it 4 minutes before Lucas Schoff from Bloomberg, who I read his newsletter every week. I really love Lucas's stuff. But talk about a big win for Alex Sherman. The other thing about Alex Sherman is he's a 49ers fan. So I love him even more. And he's been making the rounds on the podcast. So he's been getting a lot of credit and his name is coming out there. So I just wanted to give him kudos because, you know, that's a big story. He had it first. As far as I could tell, I didn't see anybody else in my, at least in my ecosystem on Twitter, who had it. And man, that was a crazy Sunday. As I was coming home, we were driving home from Clear Lake, which is near Napa. And, you know, we all ended up going to Dave's to watch second night of WrestleMania. Actually, you know, you weren't able to make it. You missed that one.
No. My wife was working later at the salon. So I was like, I don't stress about it. You know, we're trying to figure it out. But, so I watched it at home.
And so, you know, just driving home and all of a sudden this thing, and I'm just like tweeting to people and I'm sending people notes and I'm texting Dave and I'm like, did you hear about this? And what a crazy day that was. But props to Alex Sherman. Big win for him with being the first reporter to break that Endeavor story. All right, what about thumbs down?
Thumbs down was, I watched, like I said, I watched a lot of wrestling that weekend. Not too much, I guess. Like, you know, WrestleMania, Bloodsport, and the Multiverse United. And I probably should put the lighting people of Multiverse United on that. My thumbs down. But my thumbs down is the spot with Penta and Dante Martin at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. The ladder match. The whole ladder match should be on thumbs down because it's the one that, it's a ladder match that no one was trying to win. They was just doing stuff without climbing. But that spot I thought was absolutely ridiculous. You know, shouldn't have been done. Sometimes you just got to say no to your talent. Granted, mm-hmm. bell rings, they can do whatever they want, you know,
but
at least put the fear of, you know, in it. Like, no, I don't want that, you know, or just say no. I don't think you guys need it. Right. And I just thought that was very careless. And, you know, now Dante Martin had a broken ankle and or whatever. He did. They said it was a clean break, but who knows if that guy is going to be the same after that, right? Will he still have those hops? Will he still, you know, we have the Justice style. We just don't know. Will it take him a long time to come back? And it just was it wasn't worth doing. Like, it was low reward, right?
Yes.
In my opinion. So I don't know. I liked, I thought the show was fun overall, but that I'd not like that ladder match. And just the setup of that spot was dumb. Like, you had the Kingdom setting up these tables. There's four tables, or they, you know, stack two on two right next to each other. For what? Like, why are you stacking these next to each other, right? Like, why are you wasting your time? They were doing this while no one was in the ring, by the way. It's just the dumbest match, you know. And then on top of it all off, you know, poor Dante Martin gets hurt for doing something stupid that they shouldn't let him do. So,
there should have been a conversation coming out of that match. And I'm not shading those guys. Like, it's what it really is to me is there's an expectation when you have all of these matches with the craziness and the high flying. And, you know, we were talking about Vikingo, you know, a couple weeks ago doing this crazy stuff. And he was the talk of the wrestling town. You have so many people putting him over as, you know, and he was a great, like, he was a special attraction. We mentioned that. We said that, you know, oh, you know, he should be a special attraction. But just the idea that the bar gets raised so high when it comes to the more dangerous aspects of pro wrestling. And I know there's big people who, oh, you guys are, you know, just old fans, and you know, you're trying to keep the young talent. That's not it. That's not it at all. What I want to make sure is that nobody feels the pressure to have to do more than they can, because that kind of stuff, it probably happens even more than we realize when it comes to these injuries. Mm-hmm. And someone like Dante Martin should have a fantastic future. But if he's going to constantly get dinged up because he wrestles a style where his body is affected, and then the athleticism, which is his calling card, is not going to be there. And he needs to make sure that it is there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you actually made a comment, and so I was watching very closely. We won't really talk about, we'll talk about this match in a little bit about the match, but I was watching Commander, and he has like three things he can do, and he just goes back to them over and over and over and over. And this is, again, no shade in Commander. He's a young wrestler. He hasn't had a lot of singles matches. He's doing what he believes will pop the fans and get over and make his boss happy, and also make Tony Khan happy so that he can come back and he could get bigger paydays on the indies, all of that stuff. And I respect that so much. But if you only have those three moves and you keep doing those three moves over and over and over and over, you're going to burn out those three moves. But mm-hmm. there's also a high level or a high degree of possible injury with some of that stuff, because he's running, you know, a rope the way that he does. And so I just hope that, you know, the idea isn't, you know, this isn't the game of death tape, right? Where you're just trying, you know, people are running these tapes to find the gnarliest and grossest things that they could possibly watch. Like, that's not what I like about pro wrestling. I like some of the daring stuff. I like, you know, one or two great spots on a show, but if there's seven, then all seven of those mean a little bit less because there's so many of them going on. And then we get to this injury, and I was really sad. Like, I was sad and I was frustrated just because of this level of expectation that has been created for these guys just to go bigger and badder than almost possible, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. And just like I said, the layout of the ladder match was just ridiculous. Even if you're the agent, or if you're just Tony Khan, you know, talking with the talent about this match, and they bring this up, Pentagon's like, I'm gonna do the Canadian Destroyer off this ladder through these tables. Someone needs to be like, well, why would you do that? Because now you're getting yourself out of the match. Does this help your partner, Ray Phoenix? Where's Ray Phoenix at? What's he doing? Now, next day, next morning, a match that completely exceeded my expectations. A match that was one of my favorites of the weekend. And I couldn't believe it happened, but it was the women's ladder match from NXT. It was fantastic. They did some stunts. They did some big, you know, but nothing overly dangerous, and it all made sense because they all were trying to win the championship. They weren't just, you know, stuff would happen, some big moments would happen, but it just made sense where it's not like the prize of winning the championship was never in anyone's out of anyone's doubt. I hope Dave gets that damn great rating, because it was awesome. And they both had a nice feel good moment at the end with Dexter Lumis came out and helped Indy climb that ladder and win the title. It was really cool. You know, I really enjoyed it. And I was just kind of blown away. I'm like, okay, this match, I just did the sign of the cross, pray for these ladies, because I'm a little nervous for them. But shit, they had an awesome match.
All right. Let's get to my thumbs down, which I think will dovetail into more of a conversation, or at least the next conversation that we're going to talk about, which is WWE creative. We saw a pretty good crescendo of a storyline as we were heading towards the last stages of the main event of WrestleMania 39 on night two, Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. And then all of a sudden, Roman Reigns pinned Cody Rhodes. And, you know, this is the Roman Reigns era So I'm not sure there should be any surprises on finishes when it comes to him winning matches, because he's the dominant force in wrestling. But I think, and I've said this on a couple of different shows now, Cody Rhodes has been so vulnerable as a babyface. He has given, you know, he has put his heart out there, and his whole destiny was winning this title, the title that his dad never got, never won. And I know some people can say, well, it's not like he's never going to wrestle for it again. But my feeling on that is WWE always tells us, you know, what's the big game in town? Well, it's WrestleMania, right? Like, this is the thing that matters more than anything else, is what happens at WrestleMania. That's the that's the big thing. That's what these moments are. So if Cody wins at SummerSlam, I just don't think it'll mean as much as this time when he could have won. We're going to talk about a Paul Heyman quote where he tried to explain this. But I wanted to get your thoughts, because I don't know if you agree on that, that Cody should have won. I mean, we talked about it before that he should have won. But as we saw it, as we saw the moment, Roman Reigns pinning Cody in the ring after some interference.
Of course.
What were your thoughts?
I thought he should have won the title there. I thought it was the perfect moment. It, when it happened, I was in shock, because I thought they were just building to that moment of crowning Cody. I don't see the need for Roman having the belt any longer. You know, I think it would have been more interesting with Bloodline kind of being vulnerable with no championship, no power now within the WWE. And then Cody as a champion would have been fresh matchups. But then I also started thinking, like, they started to try to get in, like, well, at least Triple H's head. But then again, it could have been Vince McMahon's head at the final call, you know. I was trying to figure out, like, well, what could they do? Where could they go? And you're right. Like, they could do it down the line, and he could win, and that'd be great. But I think it was just that moment where it felt like the whole crowd was almost in unison. You know, maybe 99% of them, I felt like, were just, like, wanting to see this moment. Unless they really have a great plan, but we don't know until we see it, so we can't say it, you know. But I just, in WrestleMania next year in Philadelphia, would it be a letdown, you know, winning it in MSG one day, you know, maybe that, you know, because that's the story. They took it from my dad in the garden. Yeah, I don't know. I also thought of thinking, like, well, maybe they're thinking, like, this whole buildup was Cody finishing the story, but that story is his dad's story. And maybe they did this to have, now it's really about Cody's story, because, yeah, they screwed his dad in the garden, but now Cody got screwed.
Yeah.
You know, I thought maybe that's what they're thinking. And that's probably what they are thinking, but I don't know, man. I don't know. But we'll see. I don't know. I don't have faith right now in the evil guy from the 1920s who's running things right now. But I mean, if Triple H was, and I hope he still is, has that power, you know, if he's still in charge of the architecting this and building to it, I have a little more faith. But not with that, you know, not with Vince kind of butting in with his wacky ideas, you know. So it's good. But this weird thing, like, a lot of people are like, I'm never, I guess, you know, I saw the Twitter, the Discord, right? Everyone's just going nuts and never watching this game, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right. But, like, I was disappointed. But now I'm kind of curious, like, well, what are they going to do? You know, I want to see it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to stick with it to, like, SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. If it's something like this kind of happens again where it's just total BS, I might just take a break from WWE stuff, you know?
Well, what they have right now, and they haven't had it for a few years now, is they have a little bit of good faith built up with the fan base. But in the last two big shows, you had Roman pinning Sammy, hot baby face, and now Roman pinning Cody, hot baby face. So that faith is probably dwindling a bit. I think it's still mostly there. I think for the hardcores, the more they hear about Vince, the more frustrated they are with the product just because, and I get that part. Like, this is not a good human who is in charge here. I'm not saying they're backed into a corner, because I don't think that. The business is hot. Things are going well. But you've seen patterns like this before historically, and you just hope that, you know, that they've learned from things that have happened in the past that you can look at and go, oh, this is why this happened. So that's what I'm hopeful for.
Mm-hmm.
But then on Monday, they promoted Cody and Brock versus Roman and Solo. The match didn't even start, and Brock left Cody for absolute dead. And this is really my worry about Cody. And I talked about it even with him winning the belt. My worry was that he was just going to, eventually, the fans were going to get tired of the act. And I almost feel like they pushed fast forward button on that. I sensed that people saw Brock as the badass and Cody as the runner up.
I think they cheered the heel turn, because that's what they do. You know, anyone turns heel, they just cheer. Oh, we saw something special. You know, that happens like almost every other week. I think Cody's smart enough to kind of keep that good faith. I think it's just all how they book him from now on. Like, my guess is Brock will probably win match one. It's probably going to be at Backlash in Puerto Rico, right? Somehow, some way. Like, but what does it mean? Like, where's after the angle? I kept thinking, like, well, what's Brock's motivation here?
Yeah.
Why is he upset at Cody? He's been doing feuding with Bobby Lashley, then Omos. Like, what's his motivation? Is he back with Paul Heyman? Is he now just a hired gun that Roman didn't know about, that Paul Heyman cut a deal with? Does this lead to Roman and Brock again? You could, because you could say, you know, Brock said, I'll do this for you if you give me another shot.
Yeah.
Cody could win Money in the Bank. I mean, there's things you could do like that, but still, it kind of seems kind of a letdown.
Yeah. And it's the thing that they always do.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever really gets over organically, because it is a pattern of how they do things. And that's why I thought the Cody thing was organic, because this dude actually tore his pec and wrestled a match, which we've never seen before. So that was such an organic moment that they did not write into storyline, and was created for them, and was sort of like, here's the red carpet. We just gave you your entire storyline for WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. And from a year from now, or maybe it doesn't take a year, maybe he wins it at SummerSlam, I don't know. But like, if you try to do extension to next WrestleMania, I mean, we saw Cody win the Rumble. What's he gonna do? We'll last an hour this time, you know? What's the hurdles? I want to see the hurdles that he's gonna have to go through to keep fans' interest. Same thing with Zayn and Owens. Like, they won the big one. Now what are you gonna do with them after, right? Like, how to keep them hot, you know? And like I said, I have faith in Triple H. I just don't have faith in Vince. And right now, I don't know if Vince on Monday, I think it was a little bit of a show off play, maybe, because hey, we just signed this deal. I'm Vince McMahon. You know, I think tomorrow's gonna be very telling at SmackDown.
If he's there,
that's bad news. But if he's not there, I think that could be good news, because maybe he would just kind of poke his head here and there, and that's our hope. You know, he's older.
I believe.
You can only hope he just takes a retirement somehow. Right.
I believe they came to the finish a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's what I believe.
Well, I've heard there's talk that this Brock thing was supposed to happen, right? And that's what the...
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it was part of the thing, right?
Yeah.
Because he was teasing in that interview with Daniel Cormier, like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. So that seemed like it was to keep people off guard for what they plans they really had.
Yeah, but or could it have been Cody was in the title and Brock was going to turn on him at and be the first challenger, right? I kind of like Happy Go Lucky Brock.
I love Moonshine Brock. This is my favorite guy.
He'd be happy and go lucky, and then he'd go just kill fools, you know? Like,
man, when he was happy, and then MVP wanted to drink champagne instead of the moonshine out of the flask, and he just got really angry. That was the best. I love that.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to see what's going to happen. I'm going to follow it. I'm looking forward to SmackDown, actually. I'm looking forward to see what's next.
Yeah, well, we're going to be at sushi. We're going to have to watch when we get back.
Later. I'm sure we'll see the results on that, but I'll skim through at night, you know?
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about a quote from one Paul Heyman, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this quote. He was talking about the psychology of the story. I believe this was on Ariel Helwani's show. And his quote was, and this is from, I believe Josh Nason was the one who wrote the piece on F4W. That's what you want, a challenger to come out a bigger star than he would have been if he had won the championship, because then where do you go from there? What is the story to tell? Now you know the story. It's Cody's redemption. He's coming back from what was just taken from him, from the defeat he suffered that he didn't deserve to have inflicted upon him. Do you believe by losing that Cody came out of that match a bigger star than had he won the championship?
I think in some cases that's correct. But I think in this case, no. I think the way the momentum was going with Cody, you know, like, it was his time. It's like if Greg Rickenbach 90, right? Sting come back from an injury.
Love it.
Well, I mean, you know, like as a kid, and what grade was I in? Freaking just going to seventh grade.
Yeah.
And I just knew my gut. I felt it. Like Sting's winning, beating Ric Flair at Greg Rickenbach. Like, he's going to win. And, you know, I just think like that you had to do it. That's, you know, you had to do it there.
Yep.
We'll see. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I think when he does win it, he's going to win it. Will we feel like it, if they did it right? Yeah. Okay. We see we see that. Yeah. This is just like a Triple H said at the press conference, right? This is his first chapter of a bigger story. Well, let's see.
Heyman and Roman said they were just in the third inning
with the Cody story
of the Bloodline story.
Interesting. Well, let's see if they can keep our interest for the next year, right?
The story has been awesome. And the only thing, well, part of my worry about Cody winning the title was that this story would change. And I kind of liked it the way it was. But look, you do have to, you can't go with the pat hand forever, right? So I knew it was going to have to change. Yeah. And I was a little like sad that it was going to change. But now that it didn't, I'm not as happy as I thought I would be just because I enjoyed the storyline so much. But again, Roman is a giant star. Brock, having him and Brock together, it reminds me a little bit of when Austin and Triple H were the two-man power trip, and they're just demolishing everybody.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it reminds me about a little bit. So, we're just going to, like you said, we're just going to have to wait and see, and we will carry on. But you know what? No matter what, it gives us stuff to talk about, which is pretty much all I care about. All right.
But man, if Cody doesn't come out of that Brock feud with the win at the end of it, that's going to be some bad news right there, I think, for him.
All right, let's get to our main event segment here, talking AEW Dynamite.
The Big Picture.
All right, John LaRocca, we got to watch AEW Dynamite on Wednesday, and all night, or not all night, but the previous several days, it was Tony Khan's big announcement. And I think we pretty much knew what it was when it before it happened. Andrew Zarian was pretty confident that it was going to be the big show in London, Wembley Stadium. But I think the stadium part is what people didn't know. He thought it was going to be at an arena, and lo and behold, Tony Khan decides to run an 80,000 seat venue where the biggest boxing matches have happened. And I'm talking about, like, you know, obviously the wrestling, the SummerSlam from many, many years ago was there as well.
Lennox Lewis, I think, right?
Yeah, like it, like, you know, that from a combat sports, you know, perspective, like it's been boxing stuff of late, I believe. But what do you think running a giant stadium for this show?
Whew. Well, I'm you know what? Like, AEW can never count out. Like, oh, they'll never do this, never do that, because they've proven a lot of people wrong. You know, I can't imagine they'll get 80,000 people there, but
that'd be nuts.
But would 50,000 or 40,000 be like a success? You know, like, hey, they really get that. Like, and I mean, a lot of people travel to these shows from the, you know, within the U.S. Would those U.S. fans now be able to, like, that's a pretty penny to travel out to London, right? Like, will they be able to afford that? Or is there enough fan base in the U.K. or the European, you know, area that will support this? We'll see, right?
I think they're going to sell 20,000 tickets right out of the gate. And then it'll probably be a little slower. And maybe they'll do more. Maybe it's 30. And then, you know, it'll be a little bit slower. But once they start to announce the matches, and I think this is where Tony Khan's going to be really smart about it, because if he's got something up his sleeve, it's got to be for a show like this, whether it is CM Punk or not.
Yeah,
this is the show to do it. They're going back to the branding of the original independent show, All In. So it's AEW's All In. And I think they're still doing All Out sometime in Chicago, but All Out was Labor Day weekend. So that would be the next weekend, I think, from All In. I don't know if that's going to happen, but you know, it just makes things so much more interesting to me. And it's, you know, if Tony Khan believes his summer fall is going to be big time, he is betting on the company by running this giant show. Now, I think there's a question about, is it going to be a pay-per-view? I think there are rumors that it could be a streaming thing, because I think there's a Warner Brother Discovery show or presentation or something some point next week. So people are speculating that. I don't know if that's the case or not, but, you know, that's a big event. And
yeah,
it will say a lot if they could get 50,000 people in there. That's pretty big time. So, I mean, I'm excited for them, and I can't wait to see what Tony has up his sleeve. I will obviously be at Double or Nothing. We'll see if I go back to Chicago for All Out. I would love to, but it just becomes a little bit of a grind. I mean, I probably won't be in the UK for that show, but for all of our UK brothers and sisters who, you know, they have to deal with a product that is US based, and unfortunately for them, you know, it's not always the easiest time for them to watch, but they support now. Now they got one. And so, you know, now I'm very happy for them to get their experience in their, you know, in their area. So that'll be fun.
I mean, will CM Punk, is he a guy that's going to, well, he's done it before, I guess, in WrestleManias. He's, you know, will he be a guy? But what's the match? Is it him versus Kenny Omega? Is that going to be enough? You're doing a Forbidden Door in June, so will the New Japan guys a few months later be enough? You know, like, we'll see. We'll see if they can, like I said, we'll see what's up with Tony's sleeve there.
Let's talk about some of the other big news on this show, AEW Dynamite. Jay White, who was heavily rumored to be WWE bound not that long ago, showed up on this show. Ricky Starks was about to face Juice Robinson, so Ricky Starks comes out, and they shot this so terribly.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you see this wide shot of Ricky looking towards the ramp for Juice Robinson to come out. Juice Robinson's actually behind him. And then you see Jay White come into the ring, but you don't get like a real great close-up on him, like as like, oh, this is like a big deal. You just get this like stupid wide shot. And I was so mad because I was like, man, this guy, you know, he's been on AEW TV before, so it's not like it's the only time, but man, you want to make this first impression with this dude. He's back with his homie Juice. They're Bullet Club, former Bullet Club members, whatever, if Bullet Club still exists. I know it still exists in New Japan.
Yeah.
But, oh, the opportunity to bring him in hot, and they screwed up that shot, man.
They screwed it up. It meant nothing, had zero impact. It happened so fast. It was over. Yeah, I mean, like I think I did tweet out that if Tony Khan's what he wanted is have Jay White be debut with less little impact, he succeeded, you know. Because, and then later I was like, okay, let's see what's gonna happen later on the show. The show goes on. They show some highlights earlier, like right after the first hour is over. They show some highlights of what happened to open the show with Jay White attacking Ricky Starks. But then that's it. No promo, you know, and like, what's he gonna give us on Rampage? One of those little backstage promos they filmed on Wednesday, yeah, like a quick little thing with some highlights. That's not gonna have any impact, right? I just don't get this, because let's look at Ricky Starks.
Mm-hmm.
He just came out of the feud with Chris Jericho and won it, right?
Yes.
So now he's going to feud with Jay White. Jay White's just coming officially into AEW. So did you have Ricky Starks beat Chris Jericho to be the setup guy for Jay White?
because
all the baby faces are heels now? Is this probably,
yeah, I know. It was time for him to win the feud, but it wasn't time for him to go up the ladder for the world title, because he had other guys ready for that, or not even ready. He had other guys chosen for that spot. So now we're back into, you know, he's doggy paddling in the deep end. He's just like hanging out, like, I can doggy paddle. I'll go for weeks, man. But that's what it is.
Instead of giving this boner for this four pillars stuff, you know, Jungle Boy wasn't there ready for that. Sammy Guevara is definitely not ready in that position. Even Darby's booking, he wasn't ready for this position to be challenged for the title. But Ricky Starks just beats Chris Jericho, who's, you know, one of your biggest stars. I think, and they had a really good match on television that made you want more between these two guys, MJF and Ricky Starks. And Ricky Starks, as you know, can hold his own with promos with MJF. That could have been a rematch. Could have been a pay-per-view match, right? I don't think, you know, if Ricky Starks doesn't win it, you know, well, that's fine. But I think it would have been a more marketable main event, a more exciting main event, with Ricky Starks challenging MJF for the title on a pay-per-view, in my opinion. So I just think, oh, we wasted all that time building up Ricky Starks, you know, beating Jericho. Oh, you know, we're going to make a star. No, you don't. You didn't make a star, because now you got to put Jay, you know, you can't have Jay White lose, because then what a waste that would be too, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Tony Khan really, in a way, booked himself in the corner, at least with the Ricky Starks, who, another guy with great momentum that's just going to be wasted, you know? Like, people are calling Cody Rhodes Lex Luger, which I thought that's completely wrong, because Lex Luger won in SummerSlam by count out and celebrate like he won the title and just made him look like a total geek there, unfortunately. You know, Cody was screwed by heels, even though it wasn't the result we wanted, and
I think the Lex Lugering, because this was my sentiment, the Lex Lugering is not about what happened in the ring. It's about what happened in creative. And if you believe that Vince McMahon was involved, or that Triple H just decided to tell a different story, so be it. But I don't know, man. I don't know if you have Cody win the Royal Rumble without thinking he's going to win that title. And then you get cold feet on him, which is exactly what Vince McMahon did on Lex Luger. He got cold feet on Lex Luger, didn't think he was hot enough, so then wanted to push it out to WrestleMania. And by then, Lex was even colder.
Or he felt that, you know, we got to do it at WrestleMania. And, you know, the booking, you know, from then and until the WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble in 94. Yeah. But anyways, but I think Ricky Starks, we're going to start talking about him in the vein of he was Wardlow, hot act, cooled off. Now, granted, Wardlow was white hot compared to Ricky Starks was.
Yes.
Cooled off. Another white hot act, now very much cooled off, the Acclaimed as well. I think we're going to kind of mention Starks in that vein, you know, just these great acts that got over organically that Tony Khan did not take advantage of.
This is a slight tangent, but did you watch episode 2 of All Access?
No, I did not. Unfortunately, I'm sorry.
I watched about 10 minutes of it. There's a storyline that is happening with Britt and Saraya, and Britt and Wardlow supposedly are like longtime friends. Supposedly Britt's very first wrestling friend. So they're showing these old pictures. The most All Access inside this show has been is showing these old pictures of skinny Wardlow. Because yeah, man, he look a lot different, but.
Is this going to lead to a storyline with like Britt having eyes for this big tall trick of water?
Well, she mentioned that. She said that because that they palled around so much, people just assumed that they were dating. And she said they've never ever even gone out on a date before. They were just buddies, just wrestling friend buddies.
And then Warlow's like, "Oh yeah, I got pictures." And then
superimpose.
Taz is gonna scream, "Show the pictures! Show the staples!" Remember, like WrestleMania 8, where he's like, "Show the staples!" I'm like, for the centerfold. I'm like, "What the hell, Bobby? Shut up, Bobby! You crazy man!" But I'd be more interested in that right now. The love triangle: Wardlow, Adam Cole, and Britt Baker.
But it did make me wonder, like. Oh, yeah, what happened to Wardlow?
Yeah, what the fuck happened to Wardlow? Exactly. The dude's doing nothing. He got his hair cut. Oh. You know, sad story about his dad and revenge. He wins a title. Then he gets screwed out of there by QT Marshall, who's like one of the lowest rung guys. You know, I think only Serpentor is probably lower than him and Luther. God, that should be the group. QT TV should be Luther, Serpentor, QT. And why are they going for the tag team titles at Battle of Belts?
Why the ROH tag team titles.
TNT champion Will Hobbs, who just won that belt, want the ROH tag team titles? Battle of Belts is just Tony. I don't think he really cares for that show.
Okay, now I don't think this is the case, but if somebody had the argument that he is purposely tanking this Friday show to get out of the time slot.
Billy Stark versus Jade Cargill. Like,
so she,
good luck.
Jade Cargill is going to destroy her, as she should.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the girl's like 19 years old.
There's something about Billy Starks, though. She has this really cool personality that I got to see when I saw one of her indie shows, indie matches in last year's All Out. I think it was on the same card where Brian and Filthy Tom wrestled against each other. I forget whatever that tag match was. But she's got a charisma to her. I saw pictures of her dad, like posted pictures of her going to like her high school prom not that long ago.
So yeah.
It's a cool story. She's going to get destroyed. But that is somebody who, you know, if Tony wanted to invest in her, you know, I would say that that's not a bad pickup because I think she's definitely got a future in wrestling.
Yeah, you know, as long as she stays safe, doesn't get injured. I know I've seen her do some pretty risky stuff.
Yeah, there's been some highlight, crazy stuff for sure.
Highlight form, but yeah, maybe give her a futures deal like Nick Wayne has. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it just would kind of tell her to chill out. Like, you don't need to do front flips off the top rope and land on Yuka Sakazaki's face and destroy it, you know. Damn, you know, let's be a little safe there out there. But Battle of the Belts,
Rampage, Rampage, Battle of the Belts. They did nothing on Dynamite to make me even want to, you know, to watch that show.
It's
unfortunate because, you know, the idea of Battle of the Belts, like, you know, when it first happened, we're like, oh, Battle of the Belts. We remember Battle of the Belts. And I think maybe the first one was halfway decent and then it just got worse.
You're not excited for Orange Cassidy versus Dralistico?
We see Orange Cassidy wrestle on TV a lot.
Yeah, and the joke's old. We've seen it, you know.
All right, let's talk about this main event title picture as we get closer and closer to Double or Nothing. It was MJF Day in Oyster Bay. He was a giant babyface on this show. They introduce a live band. MJF comes out. There's a microphone and a stand as somebody who's going to sing. The mic stand sitting there waiting for someone to sing into it. And MJF starts singing Pennies from Heaven. Now, this is weird on a professional wrestling show. So I'm not going to say that I like this segment in the vein of a professional wrestling show. But if I was going to grade MJF on being an entertainer, what a fantastic job. Like, the guy is uber talented.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is how this helps our scenario with MJF and Jungle Boy and Darby and Sammy, because all of this happened in Long Island, MJF's favorite place.
Mm-hmm.
He was the babyface. After he's done with his performance, Jungle Boy is hiding out. I forget who he was dressed as. And he attacks MJF. I think he was dressed
as Blade from Butcher and the Blade, is what he looked like to me.
And he attacks MJF. Now, already, he is supposed to be a good guy, attacking the bad guy from behind. And then he doesn't even get to beat this dude up. He goes even with MJF, who was hit from behind and did not see him coming. They go even, and even worse, the security guards pull these guys apart.
Mm-hmm.
MJF is standing up and being pulled by these security guards. Jungle Boy's on all fours and cannot get to his feet. He looks like the worst babyface. Well, actually, not even the worst babyface on this show, but a bad babyface, and I felt so bad for him. This was maybe the worst job that they've done so far in anything relating to this feud when it comes to one of the participants for the match against MJF.
That visual of Jungle Boy trying to get at MJF with the security guards and pulling on his belt, and they're holding him back like a little kid, not a good look.
So bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
So bad.
So then what happens? Sammy Guevara's music just starts playing. He's walking out. MJF and Jungle Boy are still eyeballing each other, but the belt has been left in the middle. So Sammy grabs it, kind of caresses it, looks at it, shoves it back at MJF, and he walks into the ring. And he beats Commander. Darby is watching from the rafters. He had nothing to do with this other than watching from the rafters. The match was a spot fest and a half. You know, we talked about it already in the beginning.
Crowd was dead, mostly other than the stunts.
I understand the idea that Commander does this great thing, but right now it's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've seen it, and it's done, and it's like, okay, like, what else can he do?
That's it. Because if you notice, just like with Vikingo, they go straight into action. There's no wrestling. Because he can't work, but he does some cool gymnastics.
Yeah.
And like you said, like you see it, you'll see it once on, you know, if you're a local indie, he's in our town. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. It'd be so cool.
Yeah. If you see him every week, you're like, oh, cool. I've seen that a million times now. You know, what else can you do, kid? So, yeah.
So then Sammy cuts a promo as well. And he goes on and on and on. He's one of the, you know, one of the reasons for AEW success and not MJF. MJF just wants to go to WWE. I thought he was trying to turn himself heel in this promo. I didn't understand it. It was one of those times where I was like, okay, you know, he needed more bullet points or whatever. Or someone needed to go over this a little bit more with him. And I was waiting for the gong, man. I was like, can we hit the gong and get this guy out of his misery? Because he's not doing what I think he wants to do with this promo in order to get over himself as a possible contender or the rightful contender for this match.
Yeah, and it's just he wasn't ready for this spot because for months and months he wasn't doing anything. And now you're just trying to force him down our throats because he wanted to do this four pillars match. And like, look at Darby, right? During that, remember that when they first shot this angle, all four ring? Darby cut the best promo.
Yeah.
Promo. We're like, holy shit, where'd this come from? We want to see more of this. And he hasn't said nothing since. He's been staring at the TV, in the back. He's been perched on in the rafters. Like, it's almost like they're like, oh, wait, we gotta kind of push them back so we could get these guys over first.
Yeah, he made them look too bad.
Yeah. And then this segment too, just like you said, the security guards came out. They held back MJF. They held back Jungle Boy. They all just stormed when they started fighting. Right? What? You gotta be consistent. Brian Danielson could take a screwdriver to a dude's eye and no one comes out to help him. Not even security or officials or anything. Yeah, he just lays there in the ring holding his eye while these guys...
They didn't want to get beat up by the shooters. That's why.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they can hold the boy, the Jungle Boy, by his underwear so he can't, you know, get at MJF.
Oh, they gave the poor guy a wedgie.
Yeah, dude, they just look at, you know, like a little dog trying, ruff, 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 you know, like, oh my gosh.
I felt so bad for that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so okay. And now here's another part of this, and this is just sort of the optics of the situation. MJF doing the song and dance and coming out and getting the key to the city and had that one supervisor guy putting him over just looks like a million bucks. And so why do I even want to root for the other guys when he looks like a giant star and they don't? That's the part that is a major disconnect with this entire thing. And yeah, they need to pivot. What I know, Tony wants to see this thing out. He's got this grandiose idea. It is not working. They need to pivot something fierce here.
Big time. Yeah. And I was trying to think what they could have done. I think, like you said, he completely overshadowed Darby, Jungle Boy, and Sammy for sure. 100%. And you just feel like this guy seems really cool and interesting, and the other guys just feel like duds, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah, you're right. They need to pivot. Maybe just go with Darby, or maybe just do MJF on TV versus Sammy, MJF on TV versus Jungle Boy. Yeah. Maybe Darby at least could – there's some hope there that he can
– give – yeah, three non-title matches. He beats two of those guys, and maybe Darby gets a pin on him to earn the title shot or something.
I mean, you still got a long time until –
yeah, like 7 weeks, I think.
You could do a mini little round robin tournament with these three guys. And whoever comes out on top of that, you know, gets the title shot at MJF.
Yeah, I agree. They need to do something. All right. The next big picture segment here was the Blackpool Combat Club beating three guys who I don't think they got their names on the TV. They quickly got beat, and then Bryan Danielson came out. And this is where I was like, okay, we're going to get the reason. We're going to get the interview. He's going to say why he did what he did to Kenny Omega. And, you know, kind of a loose reason here, but, you know, he was with his family, and he realized how much he loves his family. But at the same time, he realized also how much he loves everyone in the Blackpool Combat Club because they are professional wrestlers. They are the best professional wrestlers in AEW, the best professional wrestlers damn near the whole weekend. He feels that everyone else is amateurs, and these guys are professional wrestlers. So this one, Hangman, comes out. Now, I'm thinking, okay, does he have a mic? Is he going to stop? What is he going to do? Because he's not about to attack these three, these four dudes all by himself. Because we know what happens when he does this.
Because that'd be dumb if he just goes there by himself with these four guys that are just, you know, destroying people, right?
Okay, here's another little small disconnect for me. The Dark Order, did he tell them not to come out? Because don't they usually have his back?
Maybe they're in the Dark Order lair somewhere. Who knows where the guys are at?
So, they hold this dude. He can't do anything. Like, Mox is holding him. And Danielson takes a screwdriver and eye gouges him with the screwdriver. Now, Hangman was covering his face, but the way that the announcers called it, it reminded me of when Jake Snake bit Randy Savage in the bicep. But at least we could see him getting bit in the bicep. On this one, like the camera like went to the side, they covered it up, and then he was covering his face the whole time. So, I mean, if he bladed, we didn't see any of the blood. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what happened there, but. So this dude's on the floor, and Danielson just called him an amateur, and he's just like he's at like another one. I felt so bad for
just dumb. Like, no one coming out to help.
Why do they do this to him? What, like, you know, we go back to Paul Heyman's idea of redemption. Like, what's Hangman's redemption here? Just is this like do you ever see My Bodyguard back in the day?
With Matt Dillon?
With Matt Dillon?
Yeah, a long time ago, yes. Yeah, I barely remember it, but I remember those my sisters were into that movie big time.
Yeah, and like the whole thing is like, you know, the guy who's getting bullied finally knocks out the bully.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, is that what we're waiting for? Because I don't know, man. Hangman's not supposed to be like the weenie guy who doesn't fight back. Like, he's supposed to be the fighting baby face, right? And I was so frustrated with that whole thing.
We want our baby faces to be smart, right? We want them to be tough too. We want them to be tough, but is tough really being outnumbered and then going in there and just getting your ass? Well, yeah, okay, we get it. You got your butt kicked, you know, like, and then the whole thing, the jabbing, the screwdriver in the eye. So what was Brian doing with that screwdriver? Was he just putting something together in the back? He's had it with him?
Well, he said use it to teach his kids or something.
Did he say that? I missed that. Like that. Was his kids there? Was he, you know, was he doing? Like, he's just there because, you know. So
maybe the screwdriver is like a metaphor for something. I don't know.
Did he call out Hangman Page? He did call out. So I guess it was his plan, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was. And I just don't feel. I mean, granted, when Bryan Danielson turned heel originally in AEW, kind of came out of nowhere, I felt, but he was so great, you know. But this one really feels like unearned, you know, like all of a sudden now he just wants to, you know, just he's mad at people in AEW for being amateurs.
I guess it goes back to that MJF interview that I didn't like where he was saying that that he's exactly what MJF said he was. That's why he's mad. I don't know. I didn't like it.
I think it's just Tony has what's the pay per view? Double Nothing coming out. Yeah. Let's do Anarchy in the Arena. We got to do that match. It's coming up.
Yeah.
That was a success. I didn't like it, but people liked it. We got to do that. Blood and Guts is coming up. You know, we got to do that. You know, so who's my groups? Who's my groups, guys? You know.
Yeah.
So.
All right, main event was the Guns coming out looking every bit of Shawn Michaels 1995 with their outfits. I thought that was tremendous.
Yeah.
and FTR comes out. I didn't sense that the crowd was really into this match. I didn't think it was anything special either. But as I was watching this, I'd heard from a bunch of people who said, I didn't like the match. FTR usually has good matches. This wasn't that. And then I hearkened back to us watching Raw 97 and Raw 98. And I think what I've come to the conclusion on about this specific AEW television show, and I've been pretty consistent with this in that I don't really like using the television show to show the great wrestling because I get interrupted by the commercials, and usually the finish is to lead to a story. That's why I really enjoyed the pay-per-views so much, is because that's where I really like the wrestling. You don't get you don't get the commercials, and there's sort of the payoff there. But when we were watching the 97 and 98 Raw stuff, it was almost all screwy. Like, there was very little good wrestling. And so when you see that, when I see the effort they were trying to tell a story, I don't think, toward the end there, it got kind of wonky. I don't think it was exactly what they wanted. But as long as I sort of have fun with it, I'm generally okay with it. But, not the best effort for whatever reason. I don't think there was a lot of impact with them winning. Also, because I think Dax is out there way too much in social media trying to swerve people, which tells them, we know, dude, we know what's happening here. Cut it out. And so everyone knew they were going to win this match, and everything that he tried to do just did not work, at least for the hardcore fans. And but they are the champions. They are back. They should be the champions, or at least in the mix, because they are the best tag team, or the second best, depending on if you think the Bucks are the best. But they are great, and I'm interested to see what they do here in this title run.
Yeah, I thought the match was good. I think a lot of things that kind of hurt this match was the time. I don't think they got enough time. I think it would have been a better match if they're able to tell a longer story, maybe a match that went through two breaks, a slower paced match. It felt like they just kept going, because I felt like they didn't have enough time. And it just felt – a lot of stuff felt rushed, and I thought they – there could have been more selling from FTR, and maybe double heat, or something like that. But I thought they didn't have enough time, and it just felt like it was rushed through. I felt like FTR was winning, the whole time. So maybe I wasn't feeling the drama, but I think with more time, I think it would have been a better match. Because I felt like boom, 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 boom at the end, and that came up quickly. I thought
so. The double sunset flip finish.
Yeah, I felt like that was mistimed a bit too as well. I thought it had to be faster, boom, boom, and then the referee 1, 2, 3, that felt like it almost like was like in a stage, right? Like mm-hmm. one guy hit one, and then it was it should have been a faster, but it was good. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Again. So you did all this just to get the belts on FTR, like Acclaim. I feel bad for those guys. I feel the Acclaim, man. That was, they had something there, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It really did. And now they're just, what are they doing now? They're feuding with 2.0, and trying to Jericho Appreciation Society stuff. And
yeah, I guess they're tag teaming with them or something this weekend.
And don't you think the Acclaim look like geeks because they came out with a big decision? And Max Caster comes out and just basically wraps the, they're not going to, they don't want to join the, but then it's like, oh, but we signed you to a match. No, you're thinking about it. That's all we hear.
They got manipulated and what's going to happen is at least I'm guessing is
manipulated.
Yeah. They got manipulated because, Angelo Parker just keeps saying he keeps setting up matches and Billy Gunn keeps falling for it. And so
it makes them look like geeks. Well, they claim they should be smarter than that.
They should, but you can always blame it on Billy Gunn. They still do the scissor me thing at the end, so that's what the crowd pops for, anyways. Because this audience is kind of like us, where they're like, the Acclaim's too good for this, but we'll just deal with it because we still get the raps and stuff. But I think what's probably going to happen is 2.0's got to at some point. Like, they have to sort of be in on the joke, right? And then they have to get mad and turn on them as if this is going to be a feud. But who knows? I didn't see it when it started, and I'm still not seeing how the Acclaim versus 2.0 is anything but an an opening match act or an opening match match.
Yeah.
So it's got to be something bigger, I would think, but it doesn't seem like it.
Well, last week, the vignette of them going out partying and dinner and the game, and at the end of that segment, the 2.0 says, "Well, I hope it's worth it doing all this stuff." Now, is it worth it to get him in the group? But would it make more sense if they were the tag team champions and you're trying to set them up to be, you're getting your own title shot?
Yes. You're setting it up so that they're pissed off at you so that they want to give you a title
shot. Or you're going to give them the false sense of security, you're going to turn on them, and I don't know.
Totally.
So what's the goal? Like, to get them in the group? Like, just stupid and lame. Like, that's what Jericho appreciates that he needs more, just more people.
Maybe it's because they're the most sports entertaining act that AEW has on the babyface side.
And Jericho was upset that Sammy Guevara got punked.
Yeah.
That's
that's not actually what happened, though.
No, he's got beat.
Yeah, and they were celebrating in the middle of the ring, but they were not doing it to rub it into Daniel Garcia's face. Mm-hmm. They were just celebrating, and Daniel Garcia just lost and didn't get out of there in time, and so Jericho came down. But he's still doing the dramatic look, like he did it to Keith Lee, too, like the... You know, Keith Lee kind of leaned in on him, and Jericho kind of leaned back a little bit. Then he just stared at him.
Keith Lee just comes in. You know what? I got him cool.
He did exactly what you said. Is he just so heard that the promo was happening, and he overheard Jericho. And on All Access, they showed that because they showed
them walking in.
No. So what they showed is Renee. Remember the interview where Renee sat down with Saraya and Britt was supposed to be there, but Britt decided not to show up. So just Renee and Saraya. Mm-hmm. And Saraya said, I still have one more doctor that I want to get cleared. And so they did that whole thing. Britt was on the sideline watching the promo and reacting to Saraya's lines as if she was in character. I was like, what's going on here?
They should do one promo on Dynamite where once the backstage interview ends, the wrestler walks away and the camera swings over. You see a sea of wrestlers waiting. So you can't. No. Real quick, I just want to touch on you. So you didn't watch the ROH pay-per-view, right?
No.
Okay. So on a very smaller scale, people talk about the Cody losing, the disappointment there, right?
Yeah.
On ROH pay-per-view, they had a match. Mark Briscoe, challenging Samoa Joe for the ROH TV title. Mark's kids are in the front row. His wife, other family members, maybe their parents were in the front row, right? They didn't really identify everyone. And there's just, it was a good match. And Mark Briscoe just gets beat clean. I think he got choked out, if I remember correctly. And they cut to his daughter legitimately crying. One of the younger ones crying,
I didn't watch it. I heard a lot of people who felt exactly the way you did. I think Big Dave felt the same way, but I guess it's a longer program or a longer story that they're telling. Like what did you sense after you saw it?
I'm guessing a longer chase for maybe he's going to be the one that beats Claudio for the title, even though people really, again, later on in the main event, a lot of crowd was deflated when Eddie Kingston didn't beat Claudio for the belt. But I think that's a longer storyline. I think maybe Shibata's going to get him in shape or something. I don't know. But Tony, Mark Briscoe, ROH, been there, done that. Put him on AEW television, man. That guy has funky charisma. People want to root for him. Of course, the story that's there, people want to just really root for him and really be behind him even more now. He's wasted on ROH TV, whatever that is. So.
Yeah. All right, that is it from here. We'll be back next week to talk about whatever else is going on, because there will be stuff. I just want to say I cannot wait until Big Dave's Observer comes out in the morning. I have to read it quickly anyways, because then I have to do a show with him later in the day. Mm-hmm. But man, I'm so excited for this one. This is going to be a big one. What is on tap for Take It Home this weekend? You and I are now the weekend hosts on the Fight Game Media Network. We're covering the weekend for everybody now.
Yeah, Take It Home now comes out on Sundays.
Yes.
And there's a show tomorrow night, West Coast Pro here right in the Bay Area. This is Chris Heroes announced as the booker of West Coast Pro. I'm going to watch that show and cover it because I want to see if there's any kind of change, what's he going to bring. And a lot of people that I talk to that go to West Coast Pro, one of their main issues with it, though they like the matches, like the people that they bring in, they bring a lot of people. They want to see more storyline based, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, so we'll see what's Chris Hill's going to do in his booking. Going to be interesting. So
cool deal. All right. So, you and I will be back on the Fight Game Media Network. Check it out. Find it in your podcast app. And if you need any help, gg@fightgamemedia.com. Shoot me an email. I can help with anything about that. All right. For John, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.